only of me, Jeffrey, and how I, Jeffrey, can act even worse than I did after Frank's death, a feat everybody would have thought impossible. After describing the events leading up to the meeting between Litvak and Katzenberg, Eisner wrote, Jeffrey went on to tell Sandy that he must run the company totally and completely, and if I did not have more faith in him than I showed in Pocahontas, then it wouldn't work. Jeffrey told Sandy many more things that I cannot remember, but the total of his conversation and the previous three are enough proof that Roy's feelings are and have been totally correct. Jeffrey's hard work is not enough to overcome his poor judgment. After continuing in this vein, Eisner summed up, The conversation Sandy has had with Jeffrey both before and after Frank died, and since my operation, demonstrate a man of pathological blind ambition, and one with no judgment. Roy is right. He would, left up to his own, destroy the company. When the Wall Street Journal said in an early profile that as a kid he pushed his little friends' faces in the dog shit on the street, they did not know they were talking about Frank and me. Jeffrey is dangerous and being advised by a dangerous man. If there ever was a question about his corporate leadership, which of course there wasn't, there is no question now. My plan as of tonight is to deal on the studio level for the time being. Corporate governance can wait. I will try to figure out the studio organization without Jeffrey and let him go just before Labor Day. There is obviously no alternative. I will not tell him any of the above, nor acknowledge how outrageous I think he is. Hopefully that will end the Jeff Katzenberg saga, and I and the company can move on to more productive work. Unfortunately, he will work the press, but that too will pass. I hope this memo helps to clear some things up. Exactly what is the real question? At the bottom was scrawled, Michael, and the date, August 14th. Eisner didn't wait until Labor Day. 5 days later, he called Joe Roth and asked if he'd run the movie studios. Roth agreed. That evening, he met with Rich Frank and offered him television, home video, and the Disney cable channel. As head of animation, Roy would now report directly to Eisner, not Katzenberg. Peter Schneider would run animation day to day. Essentially, Eisner himself would replace Katzenberg at the head of the three units. He was now assuming the duties of three people, himself, Wells, the president, and Katzenberg, head of the studio. The more Eisner thought about the plan, the better the idea seemed. This was exactly the sort of renewal that he and Wells had been talking about. Eisner asked Katzenberg to meet with him that Wednesday at 11 a.m., ostensibly to discuss the memo about reorganizing the company that Katzenberg had been working on. Katzenberg brought a copy of the memo with him, but Eisner didn't give him a chance to discuss it. "This is a day I've dreaded for a long time," Eisner began. "I wish it hadn't come to this and that we could have made it work. But I'm not going to be able to give you the job you want, and you're not satisfied with the one you have." Eisner handed Katzenberg a press release that Dreyer and Litvak had already drafted, announcing his resignation and the appointments of Roth, Frank, and Schneider. Katzenberg read it, then put it down. He didn't seem surprised or upset. "There are two kinds of divorces," he said. "One in which you're best friends, and one in